Sano, Sego, Segoli, and welcome to Compelling Conversations. I'm your host, David Moses. On today's show, I had a chance to speak with a couple of people over at the Gathering Place by the Grand as we were talking about a portable planetarium that had been set up there. I start the conversation with Jill Rogers. She is a research assistant at McMaster University with Indigenous Student Services. And then we go into a conversation with Dr. Robert Cockcroft. He is the assistant professor and director of the William J. McCallion Planetarium at McMaster University. He is also the secretary of the Canadian Astronomical Society. But going back to our conversation with Jill, that's the one we'll start with. It was also interesting to speak with her about why it was set up at the Gathering Place by the Grand. That is what they call a pop-up study hall. And that is happening every Wednesday from now right through from the winter, fall and winter terms for the school year for students to access every Wednesday from 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. every week. Fascinating stuff. I'll repeat that at the end of the show. But right now, let's listen to the conversation I had with Jill Rogers. And how long have you been with Indigenous Services at McMaster?
Oh, I've been there in various capacities since 2016, but I've only been working in my current role for the past year. Basically, we've applied for a grant through the Canadian Internet Registration Authority, and we've been able to offer this space at the Gathering Place for post-secondary students. And it doesn't matter if they're from Six Nations Polytechnic, Mohawk College, McMaster. They could be from anywhere in the area. Mm-hmm. Western University would be an example, but they have access to this space. Right now, we currently offer it every Wednesday. Last year, it was initiated through the COVID pandemic, and students weren't able to have like reliable internet at home. So this was an initiative that was spearheaded by McMaster with the Indigenous Student Services, the Indigenous Studies Department, and also with Six Nations Polytechnic and Mohawk College. So this initiative is really just about having a nice, quiet, safe space to do work while you're doing your studies. And it has a really good internet connection where, most of us don't have that in our own homes. So just encouraging students to go. Like, sometimes our houses are really loud. There's multiple people living in there, and concentrating can be challenging. So, that's basically what this space is meant for.
Now, when you say this space, this particular space here at the Gathering Place, you mean on Wednesdays?
Yep, every Wednesday at the Gathering Place. You can also access each institution's, like Indigenous Student Services as well. They also have spaces, but this is an alternative space. It allows for room that you don't have to travel to campus. Mm-hmm. That's the biggest thing, is transportation issues are always like a huge concern. Right. And we're hoping to address it in the future. But right now, this is kind of like an intermediate solution. From here to McMaster anyways, it's at least 40 minutes away. Mm. So, that cuts out time. It gives you more time to study and work on your studies. But to encourage students to come out, we've kind of seen which ways we could entice students to access the space by, connecting with making knowledge accessible. And, this was, I believe, developed by Tom Deere, yourself, and Rick Montour. So this is a great way to kind of give back to community and allow community to access some of the knowledge.
Here this afternoon, what you're going to be seeing is a portable planetarium that is being set up right at this moment while we're speaking. And that's going to be showing students and people this presentation of some Indigenous constellations and the stories that go along with them.
Yeah, and it's really exciting. I've seen it at McMaster. I have not seen the portable one yet, so this is really just exciting for myself as well. And it really gets you thinking about, the stories that we have in relation to time as well. Mm-hmm. Because, I was speaking with Dr. Cockcroft on the side previously. And I was like, oh, so like, because you can tell when stars start to shift based on their projections. I was like, does that mean our stories shift? Do we come up with new stories? So it just gets you questioning things and like, you know, seeing like, what were our stories before him? Like before that, there may have been one, right? So just gets your mind going.
Yeah, yeah, good question. And you know, I think that being able to go in and sit down and look at the stars, it's just fun to look at stars anyway.
Exactly. And you don't get to see that clarity, especially in the city, right? Like you don't get to see all of the different constellations that you do in this pop-up.
Yeah. Pop-up. Light pollution. Yeah.
Exactly.
Unless there's a power outage or something and all the lights are gone.
And like Starlink, like all of their satellites are actually changing the skyscape. So you get to see it without that, right? Yeah, like you get to see what it looks like without all the satellites. If you haven't been able to make it out today, there's definitely another opportunity. There's a few extra spots for the January 25th. You can check it out on Eventbrite and just register. But it's really neat that, you know, it's these stories are being told at a time where they're relevant, right? Like you can see exactly what Dr. Cockcroft is teaching or sharing. You can see it in the sky at night right now. It's not something that you'll see in the winter months or in the summer. It's relevant to our current time.
Now, the other thing you mentioned earlier about you can't see these the kind of stars that we'll see in the planetarium because of light pollution and those kind of things in the city. The other thing that, well, I guess you can create that if you want to in the planetarium show, but you can also see it without any cloud cover.
Yes. Yes, totally. It's really clear. You can see everything. One of the cool things that, like, I was just playing around in the show with Dr. Cockcroft and like he's able to show the stars even like what they look like 100 years ago, 1,000 years ago, like 10,000 years ago, or even project what they're going to look like in 15,000 years. So they like there's because stars, you know, they just I don't want to say disappear, but like, you know, their lifespan ends and then a new stars come. So like, you know, that speaks to our stories too.
And plus the universe is expanding. So that automatically changes things over time, right?
Yes, 100%.
I'm standing with Jill just outside the portable planetarium inside of the Gathering Place by the Grand here on Six Nations. And it looks pretty cool. It kind of looks like a bouncy castle, Jill.
It does. Apparently you can just slide right into it.
And what's interesting is, I mean, it's not overly big. Of course, it has to fit within the building itself. But you were saying that there's three shows here today, and they're all sold out.
Yeah. So we have one at 2 o'clock, another one at 3:30, and the last one is at 6 o'clock. They're completely sold out today, but if you've missed it, you can catch the January 25th show. There's still a couple seats that are available on Eventbrite.
Great. Now, you know, the other thing that we were just talking about is communities. I asked you if you were from Six Nations and you were said you were actually from...
Amjanong First Nation.
That community, you know, I remember doing a story on and things and following it a little bit. And you said it's known as Chemical Valley.
Yep.
How is the community doing these days?
I think they're doing fine. I think they're getting, you know, a lot of, support, like academic support to, you know, research kind of what's going on. And they're doing a lot of monitoring in terms of how community still feels about it. I'm urban indigenous, so I don't always get to like go back and check and, you know, see how everyone feels. But, you know, I think there's some strides that are being made. Mm. I think it's still an ongoing issue.
Really?
So,
I remembered, I drove by it. It's in a really sort of a unusual location. Isn't it like below a bridge or part of it is below
part
a bridge?
Part of it is. Yeah. My grandfather's house is actually there, right on Vital Street. But, so like originally it was surrounded on three sides by petrochemical industries. I think the one crossing the river is now no longer there, but it's still two sides. And, you know, there's the ongoing flares that, you know, that's a common issue. And a lot of, like, alarms going off in community, like, those still happen.
What's the population? Any idea?
Ooh, the last time I looked, it was 1,800. On reserve, it might, I think it's around 1,000. Most of us live, you know, it's a mix as well, right? So some of us live urban, some of us live on reserve.
It speaks volumes, I think, in terms of how this country has treated Indigenous people by just building, as you said, surrounded by three sides, by chemical plants and bridges going overhead and urbanizing the whole area without paying any real attention or respect to the First Nation at all.
Yes, there's definitely so many challenges. It's actually changed our birth rates, two females to one male, and that's definitely present in our own family. There's myself, my sister, and then my brother. So you're seeing that play out in real time. And that is actually associated with environmental, like, pollution problems. So I believe we're the only place in the world that experiences that, other than animals. Definitely, like, my mom has told me plenty of stories of, like, what it was like growing up there. Hearing alarms go off in the middle of the night when you're, like, 7 years old, and you just, it was kind of at the time of, you know, like, the wars and stuff like that. So it was not knowing if it was, like, war-related or if it was, like, chemical-related. So, and just not knowing what to do when you're, like, 7 years old, Your parents aren't home, you're just freaking out. But
so the alarms that could have been interpreted as either from, you know, an air raid kind of a siren and or a chemical siren or some kind of contaminant, I guess. Is that from, like, potential leaks that would be happening?
And it's definitely, like, back then it wasn't even, like, an air raid. It was someone driving around community with a siren out on their vehicle. And just, you know, alerting community back then. I believe now there's actual sirens. But
And it still goes on today. Okay. Well, I really appreciate you sharing that. Again, going back to the portable planetarium that is getting set up here, you may have heard that noise in the background. That was actually, as I said, it's like a bouncy castle. So there's actually a big fan that is blowing this thing up and keeping it inflated. We're only on the outside of it right now. I can't wait to go inside and see what this thing looks like in there and get this, see what the show looks like inside this. Of course, it's a limited seating. And what's interesting is that Rob was just saying that normally youth and people that are able to will sit on the floor and look up. If people can't sit on the floor, there are some chairs that are there for people that, need to sit on them. Because this is the portable one, but there is a planetarium set up at McMaster that is on campus and people can go to. So the shows are probably being shown there as well.
And Dr. Cockcroft is very adamant that all of the shows are free for Indigenous people. It's meant to, you know, have access to our own knowledges, not put parameters around it. So it's always an option, whether you want to go to, you know, Mac to see it or arrange that he travels.
Oh, really pleasure speaking with you, Jill. Thanks so much for this.
Thanks for having me.
Okay. So that was Jill Rogers. She is a research assistant with the Indigenous Student Services at McMaster University. It was fascinating stuff to learn that every Wednesday over at the Gathering Place by the Grand, students can access that space from 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. so they can find time to have a quiet area as well as great internet to do their studies every week through the fall and winter during the school year. All right, let's move on to the second interview I did with Dr. Robert Crockcroft. He is the assistant professor and director of the William J. McCallion Planetarium at McMaster University and also the secretary of the Canadian Astronomical Society. Dr. Robert Crockcroft is the assistant professor and director of the William J. McCallion Planetarium at McMaster University, and he's also the secretary of the Canadian Astronomical Society. And I'm speaking with him about the show that we are seeing here at the Gathering Place by the Grand and the portable planetarium that they set up inside to make and show this presentation that you can also see at McMaster University at the planetarium that is housed on campus there. Welcome, and thanks for doing this.
Thanks very much, David. It's great to be here.
Now, you know, the first thing I observed is that when I saw this portable planetarium going up, it looks like a bouncy castle, right?
Yeah, that's often the first impressions that people have when they see this huge inflatable dome. But it's very different from a bouncy castle once you go inside, as you just experienced yourself, because we're projecting the night sky, a simulation of the night sky, onto the inside of the dome. And so we can get to see what the sky would look like this evening, for example, or tomorrow, or any day of the year, different times of the year, or different locations from Earth. And so that's essential for when we're telling the celestial bear story, as you've just seen as well, and showing why the celestial bear story particularly relates to a specific time of year when the hunting season starts, but also to this location, either in what we now call Upper New York State or Southern Ontario. And the story of the celestial bear, as you see it told in the sky, doesn't make sense at different times of the year or different locations.
Yeah, and that's very well explained throughout the presentation. It really does a good job of transporting you into that space and taking you into the intimate environment by which you can experience that.
Yeah, so I think this is one of the benefits of the planetarium, is that immersive experience, in that you're inside a dome. So just like you're under the real night sky, which also looks like a dome, rather than presenting this kind of information on a 2D screen, you can still talk about the same concepts, but if you're under something that looks more like the night sky, it's a bit more intuitive about, you get to really sense how the sky works on different timescales. And you have the benefit of not having to wait the entire night or the entire year to see how the sky changes. You can just, I like to say we're a bit like Doctor Who, in that you can control space and time. And so we can show you things more easily and quickly in the dome. Again, so you don't have to wait out all night or throughout the whole year to see what's going on in the sky.
And in fact, you have so much control over that space and time that you can literally go back a millennia if you want to see what it looked like 10,000 years ago.
Or exactly.
What it looked
exactly.
Like 10,000 years in the future.
Yeah. So we some of the questions we have at the end is, so how the stars are all moving in the sky. They're not going to change in our lifetimes, but over the generations, the stars will slightly move. And so sometimes we have a question at the end. So how, if you're looking at the celestial bear story, how far can you go back and still have the same shape of those stars in the sky?
Right.
And so we can run that simulation, and it's 50 or 60,000 years before you get an appreciable change of that shape of stars.
That's interesting in itself, isn't
it? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that really is. I never really would have thought to look to the stars to give you that kind of information. But it is fascinating to know that you can do that.
Yeah, it's incredible to see. I mean, it's quite mind-bending to see the stars change when you run the simulation that fast in the first place. But specifically for this story, it's very informative as well.
And, you know, the other thing I thought about was how, from what you just explained about being specific to this area, time of year, and the given time frame at which the stars would line up to allow the story to be told, it sounds like you could almost use the stars as information to say Indigenous people have been here on this land and in this area for X amount of time.
Yeah, that's what I was kind of implying. I mean, it's hard to say for sure, but I think that's another piece of evidence, as it were, to support how long have Indigenous peoples been around looking at the sky and telling stories about the sky and using that to inform them when certain things should happen with ceremonies or the hunting season or the planting season or harvesting season, things like that.
What have you found since you've been showing these stories and sharing them? What are some of the things that you have learned or maybe have been surprising to you to learn from what people have said about it?
Yeah, so I think there are two perspectives on that. We see Indigenous groups coming to see the Celestial Bear story and non-Indigenous groups as well. And I think for Indigenous groups, it's in the comments that we've received afterwards, it's affirming and validating to see that in a Western Eurocentric facility like we have on campus with the McCallion Planetarium, to see Indigenous knowledge being incorporated into regular programming. Not that, of course, that those knowledge systems need to be validated by Eurocentric or Western perspectives. Of course they don't, but to see them included naturally and regularly. And actually the Celestial Bear is the most requested show that we have in the slew of shows that we can give. From non-Indigenous audiences, what we've seen or the comments that we hear back is that it's great to see a different perspective. So the same information is encoded in the story, but it's told within a story. And so it challenges, you know, from a Western Eurocentric perspective, what does a story mean? Because it can be seen as a lesser concept in Eurocentric or Western perspectives. But here you see information encoded in a way that I think it makes it easier for people to remember. If you're trying to remember which direction is the sky moving, or where is the sky moving, or how, you know, what time of year do things happen? Just brute force memorizing that doesn't work for many people. But if you have it in a story, the story is easy to remember.
Sure.
And so then the story relates to how things are moving in the sky. And so then immediately you know how everything is moving in the sky just by remembering the story.
Yeah, nicely said. What first attracted you to this line of work or getting into this kind of thing that you're doing now?
So I'm originally from the UK and I moved to Turtle Island in 2005. And it took me an embarrassingly long time to understand the historical travesties, prejudices that have been and continue to be ongoing today, that Canada has towards to Indigenous peoples. And I stumbled around for a long time trying to understand and learn as much as I could and figuring out how do I contribute to this. And then it was when Tom Deere came to approach us at the Planetarium and said, would you be interested in producing a collaboratively produced show on Indigenous astronomy? And then it suddenly clicked, duh, I'm trained as an astronomer, so I help with Indigenous astronomy projects. That's how I contribute to, I know words like decolonization and reconciliation are loaded words, but that's how I contribute to those things. Right.
And how long have you had the portable planetarium?
Not very long. So only since April
of
this year, 2022. And so we've been practicing very hard with it over the summer. And this is being at the gathering place today in October is our third offsite visit. So we're still new and we're still learning about how to best use it. But what we've seen so far is that audiences are still, they're just as excited to come into the portable planetarium as they are into the McCallion Planetarium on campus. So it's really exciting to be involved with these projects.
And I guess it's pretty exciting in itself to have something that is portable like this that you can take around to different communities.
Yeah, our hope is that it makes it much more accessible. You know, people don't have to trek all the way to campus if we can bring the portable planetarium to them. Mm. And so it's a bit more work on our side, but that's what we would like to invest in, you know, so we can bring it to communities like we're doing today at the Gathering Place. And we will be doing, there's another date in January that we're coming back. And then Jill Rogers, who's coordinating these events, these visits. She says they're so popular that she's hoping to schedule a third date as well. So stay tuned for that. We're loving doing these visits, and we hope we can continue with many more.
Yeah, that's great news. So aside from those dates and doing those things, what do you see as the possibilities for you moving into the future with a portable planetarium like this? And how it might evolve and might change things for you.
So in terms of the, I think it's just another way, like I was saying, to increase accessibility. So we can reach a lot more groups that, for whatever reason, there may be barriers coming to the university. We can take the portable planetarium to them. And so the diversity of the groups that we're visiting, for example, but also through that, maybe we're also able to do some more collaborations as we've been doing with yourself and Tom Deere and Rick Montour, in that we can change the kind of content that we're doing. So it's not just from a Western, it's not just heavily Western Eurocentric perspective based, but we're including more Indigenous perspectives or other perspectives as well.
Is there anything else you can think of that you feel is important to mention or talk about that we haven't touched on, either regarding the presentation itself or astronomy or what the future may bring?
We're open to collaborating with as many folks who are interested. So at the moment, for example, we're working with the McMaster Museum of Art, and in particular, the Indigenous curator there, Rianne Chartrand, who has an exhibit until the beginning of December that's called We Are Made from Stardust. And so we are collaborating in that groups visiting campus are invited to see both the planetarium show, the Celestial Bear show, and to go to the museum to see Rianne's Stardust exhibit. We're also partnering with various communities to take to the portable planetarium to underrepresented youth as well. So there's a group that we're working with in Toronto that serves the GTA, the GTHA. And we're also thinking ahead as well to the 2024 total solar eclipse, which if folks don't know about that, it's going to be a very exciting event that we get to see from Hamilton, from Six Nations, from Niagara, from this region of Southern Ontario. But folks who are in Toronto or London, Ontario, are unfortunately not going to be able to see unless they travel into the Six Nations McMaster Niagara region of Southern Ontario.
Right. That's pretty exciting. That's coming up, like you said, in 2024.
So April 8th, 2024, yes. At 3:18 p.m., the sky will go completely black. And it's the only time when it's safe to look at the sun with no special equipment or anything, with your own eyes. And it will be so dark that you'll get to see some of the planets and some of the stars at, you know, in the middle of the day, in the middle of the afternoon.
Providing we have a clear sky.
Providing we have a clear sky. Given that it's April, we have a 50-50 chance, according to the weather reports. Yeah, so fingers crossed.
Right. Oh, that's pretty exciting stuff. Thank you so much for doing this and continued great success in the future.
Thanks very much, David.
All right.
Dr. Robert Crockhoft is the assistant professor and director of the William J. McCallion Planetarium at McMaster University. He is also the secretary of the Canadian Astronomical Society. And I was speaking with him about the pop-up planetarium that they had over at the Gathering Place by the Grand. And also with Jill Rogers, who is the research assistant for Indigenous Student Services at McMaster University, and their pop-up study area that they have every Wednesday over at the Gathering Place by the Grand for students from 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. throughout the fall and winter terms of the school year. And it's not just for McMaster students. Anyone from Six Nations Polytechnic, Mohawk College, and other schools within the area can use the space as well. So that's a great stuff for students to be able to access, not only for a quiet place to go to and study, but also because of the great internet that they have over at the Gathering Place by the Grand, so students can access that and have a place to study as well. Thank you for listening to Compelling Conversations. I'm your host, David Moses. Nyawa, Miigwech, Ona.